help you, sir?
Oh, yeah, I'm looking for a good mystery on something off the beaten track like the Maltese Falcon.
Well, that was a fascinating story. But here's one that has everything the Falcon had and more. It's Raymond Chandler's latest bestseller, The Big Sleep. And what a picture that'll make.
You mind if I look at it? Huh. Sometimes I wonder what strange fate brought me out of the storm to that house that stood alone in the shadows. As I probed into its mysteries, every clue told me a different story. But each had the same ending, murder. Every instinct warned me to beware that something more dangerous, more deadly than I'd ever known before was in that room. And suddenly,
I like that. I'd like more. That's even better.
Hello, welcome to Movie Umbers. My name is Bob Sham.
I'm Angela.
And the sounds here may be dogs or gunshots. It's Film Noir Month. We're calling our theme The Left Hand Endeavor. For every day on every weekday this month, we're talking about a classic film noir selection. Every Monday, we're doing a little thing called Philip Marlowe Mondays, which is we're talking about a movie adapted from a Raymond Chandler, Philip Marlowe detective novel. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, the movies themselves were, came out all over the place, but the one we're talking about today, The Big Sleep from 1946, directed by Howard Hawks, starring Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. This one is the first Philip Marlowe story that Raymond Chandler said. So it's in the, we're discussing them in the orders that, Raymond Chandler published the stories.
Like it.
So, this is our first one, and probably the most infamous Raymond Chandler adapted Philip Marlowe story out there, and one that kind of helped define this and the Maltese Falcon, though they're two different detectives, but they do kind of act the same, are the ones that, like, Humphrey Bogart is really known for.
Yeah.
And this one is big because Lauren Bacall is in it, who by this time they did get together after appearing together on To Have and To Have Not, where they initially met. But yeah. The Big Sleep, directed by Howard Hawks. And yes, this is also co-written by William Faulkner alongside Lee Brackett, Jules Firthman, and of course, based on the story by Raymond Chandler. Yes, William Faulkner shares a screenwriting credit here.
Mm-hmm.
The movie's pretty infamous in your classic film noir. It kind of makes sense. We're hitting up a lot of heavy hitters, obvious ones, and this one's no different, but this story is out there, kind of all over the place, fucking crazy.
It's like twist and turn at every corner.
Three people that get killed in this movie are the one, Geiger, is maybe very briefly in this movie and then he's dead. The person that killed Geiger, we never see him and he gets killed. And then there's another guy that everyone is kind of looking for and he also gets killed off screen. Like, three people die, and we don't see two at all. The killer of the first guy that dies, we never see him at all, which is just fucking wild. And this character of Geiger, apparently in the original Raymond Chandler story, the Geiger character that is originally killed and runs the bookstore, in the book, he was like a pornographer. He ran like an adult bookstore, and he was, I don't know how explicit they said it, but he was a gay character.
Oh.
And in the movie, the chauffeur that gets shot in the later in the movie is supposed to be his lover, kind of more like very alludes strongly that it's his lover. And
interesting.
And this is kind of fairly common if like if homosexuals were represented in any way, it definitely was more in an underworld type environment,
yeah.
Which seems a little lame. Like the third man has that element in it as well. A movie we'll talk about later this month.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's kind of like most of these people in these movies are usually not very good people anyway, no matter what their sexuality. But it is interesting that these are kind of the stories that in the movies, it's not as blatant, but apparently in the books, if characters were gay, it was a little more obvious, though they were often portrayed as kind of seedy. They essentially, in the book, it was like the circus of books, essentially, right?
Yeah. So the only...
That's the gays porn store in West Hollywood.
Knowing that now, you know, the only indication that we get that the chauffeur really loved Geiger more than being his chauffeur is that he has set up Geiger in his bedroom as though it is like a shrine.
Mm.
You know, he did that.
Yeah.
So there is this part of him sort of doing this like reverential setup of him in the bedroom where it's almost as if he is like a deity.
He was kind of the chauffeur was very kind of impassioned in like standing up for the Geiger character too. So there's one character that we meet pretty quickly because he's hired to talk to this guy named General Sternwood who hires him. What does he hire him to do?
He hires Philip Marlowe to get rid of this blackmail that Geiger is doing on his youngest daughter. So he has two daughters. The youngest one is Carmen.
Yeah.
And she is a problem.
What's your name?
Riley. Doghouse Riley.
That's a funny kind of name.
Think so?
What are you? A prize fighter?
No, I'm a shamus.
What's a shamus?
It's a private detective.
You're making fun of me.
Uh-huh.
And his older one is Lauren Bacall.
Vivian.
So you're a private detective. I didn't know they existed except in books, or else they were greasy little men snooping around hotel corridors. Ah, oh, you're a mess, aren't you?
I'm not very tall either. Next time I'll come on stilts, wear a white tie, and carry a tennis racket.
I doubt if even that would help.
Who's also gotten into some trouble. They call her Mrs. Rutledge because she had a marriage that was very short-lived and didn't go very well. We don't even know what happened to her husband. But they call her Mrs. Rutledge the entire time, even though she is a young woman. Carmen has signed these promissory notes to pay Geiger all this money. And both of the girls seem to be gamblers. Vivian is in with a different group of people than Carmen is. Carmen's people are a little more shady.
Carmen, apparently in the book, was just straight up drug addict. That's how she gets blackmailed. In this movie, she's set up and doped up, like involuntarily, because it's Hays Code. They can't just make her a smackhead, right? But they set her up and put her in like a Chinese robe and get her, and someone doses her and they take pictures of her. And when Philip Marlowe goes to Geiger's house and finds this scene, he sees Geiger dead. And she's sitting there doped up, has no idea what's going on.
Seemingly, they're going to frame her.
In a camera, a hidden camera with a missing film roll.
Yeah, so immediately he thinks, I gotta find these pictures, and I gotta get this girl home.
Mm-hmm.
And he does that. He goes into the man's desk and finds this book that's got a bunch of codes in it. He doesn't know what they mean, but it has the folks' last name. Is it Steinway? That's a piano.
Sternwood.
And there's all these numbers below it. So he says to himself, I got to take this book with me. So he takes the book. He gets the girl home. By the time he gets back to the house, Geiger's body is gone. So it gets even weirder. And then
we find out that this is convoluted as shit.
Also, just to throw it in there, because this will wrap back around, he is a private detective, but he was turned on to this case by his old buddy who is a cop.
Right.
So they come back together over time. Bernie. He gives Bernie information when he can, but he doesn't call him and tell him everything because he's trying to figure out what's going on.
Now, this is an intense web in this story. I mean, and the plot itself, if you really break it down for what the plot is, It's completely fucking convoluted. It's very confusing. Even after watching this movie, I was like, I need to read the synopsis of this fucking movie again. And I had to read the synopsis like twice just to make sure that I got everything straight. The guy who murdered Geiger ended up being like the chauffeur who was very protective of Carmen, but
because he was in love with her,
and he they find him dead in their car, like in the river. And so so it's automatically confusing there, because there's these impassioned players that actually do terrible things, but it's only by their name. And then they're talking about this Stern guy who you never see, who has some kind of connection. And apparently in the book, Vivian was married to Stern.
He was her father's assistant who had disappeared a month prior.
And Vivian suspects that Stern is involved in that, like, that Philip needs to find Stern, or that's what her father really wants him to look into.
And there's this gambling man who's the one she's more tied up with, Mars.
Mars, yeah.
And his wife allegedly ran away with Stern when Stern disappeared. So there's that whole thing going on as well. I would just like to throw out, just so we acknowledge it for a moment, that as Philip Marlowe is walking all around this town trying to figure out all this stuff, ladies' panties are just dropping.
Oh, yeah, everyone likes
just dropping.
I love the cabbie lady.
Hey, sugar, buy yourself a cigar.
If you can use me again sometime, call this number.
Day and night?
Night's better. I work during the day.
I know, I was thinking about her and the bookstore lady.
You know, it just happens. I got a bottle of pretty good rye in my pocket. I'd a lot rather get wet in here.
Well. Looks like we're closed for the rest of the afternoon.
Oh, bookstore lady's
bookstore
great.
Bookstore lady's wonderful.
Cabby lady's great because she's indicative of like the war effort time in which women were having to do a lot more everyday roles that traditionally men would do while men were fighting in the war. And Philip Marlowe's car has like little letter stickers, like decals that signify gas rations and shit. But he drives around a lot, so he was using way more than the 8 gallons a week.
Well, and that's what he's charging. He basically, his rate is $25 a day in expenses, and the expenses are gas.
Also, there's other guys, like there's more people that are in here, like Joe Brody and his girl Agnes. And Agnes worked with Geiger at the bookstore.
Which the bookstore was a front for the gambling that was happening in the back.
Right.
Or it's, whatever was
it's
happening.
It's Hays Code era, so the worst crime will be like murder off camera or gambling, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can't actually make them pornographers. The Catholic League that made this code up will get upset.
There is a part where they're taking everything away from the back of the bookstore, and they don't really say what they're taking away. It's like, could like have, if you know the book, you could still be like, well, probably the porn. What this movie feels like is, in the adaptation from the novel to the movie, typically what happens is you sort of pick one streamlined thing and you combine characters and you would maybe have, you know, a couple of these guys would do the things that five guys are doing.
Yeah.
And instead they try to still call out all the names and have all these people individually. And to me, that's just a bad adaptation.
Yeah.
Because it sucks when you have to cut things out, but you can't be so precious about it that the movie gets so confusing.
Like, the things that changed were really just changed because of the code.
Yeah.
If anything, it almost seems like they just made sure not to leave anything out. Like, Joe Brody and Agnes, like, they're in here because they're the ones that killed the chauffeur, and they've got the pictures to blackmail Carmen with.
I know, but it's so convoluted. I don't even know how I would combine these characters and stuff, but you should in some way, because if you were to read this book out loud, it would probably take 8 hours, right? That's how books are. You can't tell that whole story in 2 hours. That's not how film adaptations from books work.
I think, and also the stories we've established is more sordid, so the characters may be more distinct in how, like, sordid that they are.
And I think reading the book would be fabulous to get into all these characters. Everyone is just kind of thing.
So what makes, now this is a good movie, though we're criticizing this plot, and everyone says that about the plot. There's not a single person out there that's like, I've thought this was very easy to follow. That's the weird thing about this movie is how wild and spun out the whole fucking thing is. But, so what makes this a good movie? Well, Humphrey Bogart is a fucking amazing, Philip Marlowe. And he plays up the character and he sells the lines in the best way. He's a total swag master. Often suspecting Vivian is played by Lauren Bacall to kind of be a part of the crimes, but she's not. And she actually, she's kind
involved.
Of is.
She knows things.
She feels like she has to be kind of involved.
She's trying to protect her little sister.
Exactly. So it's not really of her vote, but she does fall for Philip Marlowe. They do have a genuine connection.
And those moments, there are moments when they're not spitting out names at you. Because we did have to, like, pause this a couple times and say, who is what and what's happening? Because it is so convoluted. But within that, there are these moments that really stick out. Like, for example, when Marlowe finds Carmen and she's drugged out. The way he handles that. All this, any scene, I think there's like two or three of them where he's in the car with Vivian. There's these moments, because it's just the way, like you said, the way he handles it. He's so fucking smooth. He's 25 years older than her.
Well,
there's not a, in real life, yes. He's 25 years older than her.
I don't know about kayfabe.
And I don't know in this movie how old they're supposed to be. I mean,
he doesn't look that old.
He doesn't look that old, and she is timeless, right? She's a timeless beauty. And in this, she's playing the older sister. So there's sort of the implication that she's lived some life, right?
Yeah.
And so there's never a moment.
She's like only 21 or something in this movie.
Yeah. They got married when she was 21.
Yeah.
And he was 46.
Yeah.
Insane. There's just no doubt that I would not also be like, I will close my store and hang out with you all afternoon if you want to sit here and.
Yeah.
But the way they are together, it's one of those things that, especially him and Vivian, like we said, the snappiness, we've talked about this in other movies, like the snappiness in this movie feels good and right and real. You know, Friday we talked about
Fred McMurray, Double Indemnity.
Double Indemnity. And the reason that movie wasn't like perfect for me is that it felt a little too fast and I didn't believe it. You know, and this movie, like, even though everything's going so fast, because of the way these people are and the characters that they're playing, there's just these charming moments. There's this moment where he's at a party and she's over, Vivian's singing, and these two girls are both trying to tell him at the same time that she wants to talk to him. And it's just like this extra couple beats they take where they're not running, even though they're packing in all this info.
Yeah.
If you have to cut out half of what I said, I understand, because I don't know if I'm making sense, but that's how it felt to me. Like, even though it's chaotic,
the muddled nature of it kind of helps make it feel a little more real.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And also, it's just overall very stylish. Like, it does work that way. And it's enough to kind of overcome a lot of confusion. And a lot of these characters are, you know, everyone's kind of a general scumbag, but some of these characters have very unique moments within them. Like, it does.
And bit characters have unique moments.
Right. There's after Joe Brody gets his ass shot by the by Geiger's chauffeur, Agnes doesn't go away. A guy that's madly in love with her, played Harry Jones, played by Alicia Cook Jr., he comes around I think he's got the pictures, right? And he's the one that kind of passes off the pics?
No, he's told Marlo that Agnes Marlo meets later. Him. He's gonna take him to... No, Agnes tells him where Mars's wife is hiding out.
Well, the Harry Jones is interesting because he's lovesick for Agnes. This guy you never heard anyone fucking mention suddenly pops up because he's got a hard-on for Agnes and she's stringing him along. And she just... Like, and her fucking actual boyfriend got killed like 2 days prior to that. And then this poor little sap, who's not a bad guy, but he's doing this because he loves a woman, is trying to protect her. And then
and get her some money.
And it ends up getting his ass killed by one of Eddie Mars' goons.
He's so weak, though. He gives her up immediately and gets killed anyway.
Where's the girl?
Listen.
You want me to count three or something like a movie? Where's Agnes?
All right. You win. She's in an apartment at 28 Court Street, apartment 301. I guess I'm yellow, all right.
You just got good sense. I ain't gonna hurt her, not if everything's like you say. You're nervous, ain't you? Maybe you need a drink.
Never mind.
I think you need one.
I don't think so,
really. You got a glass?
A guy like that's not gonna let you go.
Right.
So don't give up your girl.
Right.
But he is a sweetheart. And that's why he does it. Because I think he genuinely believes, well, if I tell him, he'll let me go.
Right.
But the brilliant thing is he actually didn't give her up. He gave the wrong address.
That's right.
And that's what makes it even better. So Marlo does call her and talks to her.
And that little detail gives an extra layer of life to that character.
It really does.
We only see for like 5 minutes.
And I love when Marlo confronts her about him later. And calls him your little man, but it's not condescending. It's basically saying,
like, you took this guy for granted.
You didn't deserve this guy. You should be grateful to your little man for saving your fucking life.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. I mean, eventually it all comes to a head back at Geiger's house. Marlo goes back and forth to Geiger's house like 5 times in this movie. Eddie Mars sends his goons.
Oh, because his wife's been hiding out since Stern went away. And Stern, what happened to him? He got killed? I can't remember.
He got killed by...
Carmen.
No, Carmen didn't kill anyone. She'd be sent up if she got killed. I think Eddie killed Stern.
Okay.
I think.
But to hide it, they hid Mars' wife.
Yeah.
And made up this rumor that she ran away with Stern.
Yeah, don't
quote
us on that.
But she didn't, and I just can't. Again, that's how convoluted it is.
It is.
I can't remember ultimately what happened to Stern, but he's not in the picture.
But yeah, but Eddie Mars gets baited into coming into Geiger's house. He thinks he's beating Marlo there, but Marlo fakes that he's like 40 minutes away at this little like town where he figured some shit out, and he tricks Eddie Mars into getting shot by his own men.
Mars has some like dumbass goons.
Yeah.
They're
goons. Way too trigger happy. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And he runs out and he gets shot up.
He actually yells, "Don't shoot, it's me." And then it's like across the door and he dies.
But it ends kind of like in that classic Hollywood way in which Vivian and Marlo do get together. I mean, it's got the snappiness and the style of what you want from a Raymond Chandler adaptation. Bogey kills it. I mean, Howard Hawks does a great job representing these characters, as convoluted as it is. But it really is just, it's all about the Bogart Bacall sizzle at the end of the day. That's what's putting asses in seats.
Remember I told you I was beginning to like another one of the Sternwoods?
I wish you'd show it.
That should be awful easy.
I like that. I'd like more. That's even better.
So, yeah, and that's Howard Hawks' The Big Sleep from 1946.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised we were able to get through that the best we could within the frame of time that we did.
Yeah.
I was a little worried this was going to be like a 50-minute episode.
I mean, it could have been.
But, yeah, it could have been. But we did touch base on the style of it and the way it all kind of works. And I won't say it's not a confusing movie, but it's kind of a fun movie to kind of let wash over you at the same time. And the little details and the interactions, really, that's what makes the movie. The style and the characterizations.
Truly.
That is what makes the movie. And, of course, seeing the chemistry between Humphrey Bogart and Warren Bacall on screen.
It's so smartly done. For example, you only meet the father at the very beginning. We never see him again, but he makes such an impression and they bring him up. He's so specific. He talks about how he had a rough life of drinking and smoking, and now he can't. So he likes to watch people drink and smell people smoke.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just, I don't know. It's just, everything's so rich.
Yes. I mean, that's the style of what the Chandler was bringing. He was forcibly like, I need to make sure every page is punchy as shit. And even if you're lost, like, you're still, like, wrapped up in these punchy-ass characters.
It's like a car speeding down the road.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to catch as much as you can.
So the bookstore lady or the cabbie, which one would you pick? There's always like a tangential lady in
cabbie.
There's always, although the bookstore lady's pretty great.
She is pretty great.
There's always like a tangential lady character in all these movies that is hotter than every other woman in this movie.
I always wonder too.
No disrespect.
Did the cabbie read for Carmen? Like, I'm always like, what
happened? No disrespect. To the hottie Lauren Bacall, unique look, great. But yeah, there's just always like these side characters that always pop out for me.
No one can smolder like Lauren Bacall.
But yeah, that's The Big Sleep. You'll give this 1 through 5. We'll give 1 through 5 combined for best out of 10.
I'm going to go 4.5.
I'm going to go a solid 4.
Okay.
Because that plot is haywire.
The plot is haywire. The plot is definitely haywire. I loved it. I had so much fun.
So you got 4.5, you said?
Mm-hmm. 8.5.
Yup.
I think that's good for this one. That makes sense.
So check it out. 8.5, sharing the rankings with movies like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Nightcrawler, Mississippi Masala, Devil in a Blue Dress, Cries and Whispers by Ingmar Bergman. Howard Hawks, our first Howard Hawks movie for the show, and it's The Big Sleep. It's at least as good as all those other movies, if not better. I wouldn't blame you if you were like, nah, man, this is S tier. I mean, that's not where we fell, but I respect your choice to S tier it. It is a classic nonetheless. So that is our first Philip Marlowe Monday in the can. Next week it will be Murder My Sweet, I believe, which and Bogart does not come back. It's a different actor playing Philip Marlowe for every week. But
don't worry, Bogart will come back this month.
He will be back later this month in one of my favorite movies we watched all for this month. I love this movie. But that said, check the show notes for links, other places to find us. Like and subscribe. Leave a comment, a correction, fun facts, anything like that. What do you think about, what's your favorite Philip Marlowe, Raymond Chandler adaptation? So supposing we end the show now.
Supposing we do.